Hello and welcome to another installment of the Double Disillusionist. My name is Dom Knight. Andrew P. Street, have you brought your lump of coal?
Look, I have. I've been passing it around just through passers-by, people in the street, low-flying birds. We're just sharing it.
Not every solution to the mysteries of powering our world are so fun to play with.
No, this is true. It's very tactile. And you know, I'm not breathing as well as I was before I started holding it. And neither is my newborn son. He's looking, you know, a little bit paler than perhaps before. But I feel it's just training him for a high coal future.
Coal, your playtime friend that burns good. Our guest today is Maddie Palmer, writer and broadcaster, one of our favourite people to talk to about all these matters. Maddie, I'm looking in your hands.
You're not seeing a piece of coal?
Not seeing the coal. Did you not get the memo?
I wasn't bad enough at Christmas, apparently.
You're like Kelly O'Dwyer. That I have to say was one of the funniest things about the whole show and tell aspect of Parliament when Scott Morrison brought in his fun time coal play pal. That
does he think he has a name for it? Is it Mr. Cole?
See, this is the old thing Colesy? I want to know. I was Cole watching Joy. The footage, and none of them seemed to get their hands covered in filth.
Lacquered. It's lacquered.
Oh, I was just going to say, is this fake coal or is this some sort of metaphor for clean coal? Because it would be pretty funny if they were handing it round and then came out going, look, clean coal. And then there was just like crap all over their faces.
That would certainly be the cleanest iteration of clean coal I've heard of. Lacquered. Lacquered. There you go.
It was a specially lacquered piece of pass-around coal provided by the Minerals Council.
See what happens when you try and set that on fire.
And still, Kelly O'Dwyer, who is with child, wasn't touching that thing under any circumstances.
See, we mocked on this very podcast not long ago, we mocked the Prime Minister, I think, for having his latest climate advisor coming from the Minerals Council. But look at the bounty that followed
already.
From that. Already
so many goodie
lumps
bags
of coal for power. Now it's under the Christmas tree at Kirribilli House this Christmas.
I was amazed that they're not handing out show bags. This could be huge. This could be like the new Batman.
You know why they're not? Have a show bag, you can't see the coal.
Oh, that's true.
So, yes, this is apropos of the discussion about our bright, glorious, non-renewable energy future, the link with power shenanigans across the country and the investigation into matters South Australian. I'm very close to Andrew's heart as a refugee from South Australia. And, of course, the other big story, the preferencing in Western Australia to one nation or not to one nation. But let's stick with coaly coal. Coal Joy, because this is yet another, I guess, step away from Malcolm Turnbull, renewable energy crusader, leather jacketed Q&A hero of the people who are liberal in name only, the moderates, the wets, the non...
Coming from that radical heartland of the eastern suburbs.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I mean, this is the thing, he was always seen as Mr. Technology, Mr. Technocrat. And so he's the kind of guy who traditionally would have been, you know, all for windmills and hydro and so on and so forth, Matty. What do you think this is all about, this whole business of yes, coal, we're all back, coal again.
Putting the coal in coalition.
Hey.
Sadly, poor Malcolm's just lost too many mates in the playground. He's had, there's been so
just
many
imagining
ministers.
Imagining the playground.
I know. Could you imagine the playground outside Parliament House and what a depressing place that would be? Because none of them are awesome enough to try and roll down the slopes.
But you just, but you just know that David Lanehelm is just going back and forth on those monkeys.
Freedom! Freedom! Yeah, well, it is. It's another shift, isn't it? It's another, I guess, slow picking away of the persona that led so many people to be enthusiastic about him becoming Prime Minister.
Yeah, well, I think the interesting thing was the first time that he was leader of the Liberal Party, he seemed to fizzle out because he wanted to run the party like a business. And I have to say, I do really feel for him because I can imagine that if I had spent my life in the private sector and in business where half the sort of secret of success is putting really great people around you, if I then went into Parliament and had no say whatsoever as to who those people were and had to treat like George Christensen as if he's a real person, that would break my heart as well. But he seemed to have overlearned that lesson, and now he's just he's just being a bit of a pushover.
It's funny, isn't it? There's no happy medium for him. And I suppose the parliamentary maths makes this almost inevitable. The first time he was simply ran roughshod over people as though he expected acclamation for everything he did just because he was the smartest guy in the room. But then this time it seems as though he's not really going to put his neck out for anything, Andrew. I mean, this is a very strange dynamic. I can't remember a prime minister who seemed less willing to actually just come out and say anything other than the most sort of vague buzzwords at this point.
Well, the thing that's kind of bizarre about this is that we have things like the statement that came out, it was either yesterday or earlier today, from, among other people, the Business Council of Australia, which were saying we need clarity. I think it was yesterday, sorry. So on Monday, that we need clarity on our energy plan. We need clarity on the way forward. We need to embrace renewables, blah, blah, blah,
just
blah.
Clarity, please. Just anything. Yeah.
Any kind
clarity,
of clarity
as
whatsoever.
Clear as a lump of coal.
Because the thing that I become literally, as you've just heard, speechless about is the way that,
well acted,
that being anti-renewable and specifically pro-coal is now such an article of faith that they're not even making the case that, oh, well, this is good for business necessarily, because business have already said, well, it's not. They're not making the case that it's economically sound. They're not even making the case that it's a high employer, particularly since one of the things that has come out in the last week with regard the Adani Carmichael mine in Queensland.
You mean is, the good mine?
Sorry, the great mine.
Yeah, the great mine. Great minds think alike.
Is that, I mean, we discovered last year, despite the continual number of, you know, the 10,000 jobs will be created, 10,000 people will be employed, 10,000 regional, and growth, 10,000 growth. When Adani were forced to defend the plan in front of the Queensland Land Council, they admitted that it would actually be just over 1,400 jobs, which is less than the amount of, I think it's something like 3,500 jobs in the solar industry will be displaced if the Adani mine goes ahead. There's some proposed solar farms up
there. Aren't there 1,400 people in the PM spin unit at this point?
I think that's just Peter Dutton's spin unit, if I remember correctly. It's around about that number. So it's just weird that the technocrat, you know, data-driven prime minister is now clinging to something that under no rational argument stands by. And it's very, I mean, it's obviously this parallels with the Republican Party in the US, of the idea that renewable energy is not being opposed because it doesn't work. It's being opposed because it is somehow morally suspect. And that's just weird.
All that sexy, sexy sunlight and sexy, sexy breezes. It is weird though, because, you know, I felt like when Malcolm was made leader of the Liberal Party, people did feel like he would have the potential to break down the culture wars, which had been sort of so built up during sort of Gillard and Abbott's opposition.
Yeah, we thought he'd sit in the middle, didn't we?
Yeah, exactly.
And pick the best of both worlds, which ironically, see, I think is what most Australians actually want. Someone in the middle picking the good bits on both sides and essentially being where most of us are. But we got Maddie.
We got someone who is running right very, very fast, which I think is interesting because, you know, Australia on the whole, you know, we have a very centrist system of government. Mm. Most of our elections are fought and won in the middle. And yet we have our government who are now currently seem to be pursuing a political agenda of running so far to one end of the spectrum that something happens. The seesaw imbalances in the middle slips down there as well.
Well, the thing that seems particularly odd about that to me is that they have such a palpable example of running to the right being dumb and counterproductive in Tony Abbott, who simply seemed to see his election as vindication of every, I guess, little instinct that he'd ever had. It was as though all of his fever dreams came true. And he was delighting in you know, but essentially going to the IPA and saying, all of your dreams, you know, we'll do it all. He didn't, but
mandate.
He said
mandate.
He would. And obviously the polls completely fell out in no time. He couldn't pass the budget. He could barely pass wind. I don't know what, you know. It was
a
disaster.
I heard him speak all the time, speaking of passing wind.
So look, that's the thing. You'd think that the people who dumped Abbott would have been kind of like, thank goodness that's over. Let's actually convince people to support us again. Mm. Because, I don't know, we seem to be running around in circles, much like the government on this podcast a bit, Andrew. But how do they get from this point to winning? How does anyone decide that this mob are worth re-electing?
Well, this I think comes into the One Nation West Australian deal, and which we'll sort of dive into in a sec. But it does seem like the plan is we'll go hard right, we'll try and colonise that handful of votes that are mainly being given to outsiders,
as though of One Nation's going base
to make the difference. And the only way I can see the strategy working is that this is all an attempt to goad Labor into going left, thinking, oh, well, we've got this, you know, now is the time for us to suddenly reveal our secret socialist roots or something.
Yeah, and, actually, let's just put a pin in that, the whole Malcolm Turnbull socialist attack that he's cribbed off Brom Bishop on Sky News. Exactly. Anyway, what were you saying?
But I think that's the idea, is that, you know, if we go really, really hard right, Labor will respond by going hard left, and then, you know, this will hand us the middle, because there'll be people who'll not necessarily agree with our, you know, like, let's burn coal sort of in every school.
But don't want to have to knit their own bike.
But we're not going to, yeah, we oppose the bike knitting policy.
Yeah, yeah.
And I
so
think
why
that
would
the,
that Labor the, do that? Why would Labor run to the left when the middle ground of people voting for them is left wide open?
Well, this is the only strategy I can see that would make sense, that for some reason they think that's going to happen. Because the idea will be that, you know, unless they are so confident in their in their voter base in the centre that they're thinking, well, they will never vote Labor, they will always end up voting for us, which the last election proved is not the case.
Yep.
So, and it seems to me that a lot of the attacks that are happening on Shorten, like the very, very personal attacks and the lack of talking about anything else whatsoever in Parliament, is almost sort of a frustrated attempt to kind of push them to do something, because Labor seem to be just kind of sitting there and not responding.
So do you think, because this is interesting, because I mean, Turnbull is accusing Shorten of being a socialist. Mm. So does he think it's kind of like the Jack Nicholson, you can't handle the truth moment, where instead of doing what one might do in being accused of something, say, actually, no, I'm not, he's actually going to stand out and go, you goddamn right, I'm a socialist. You can't handle the socialism. Every day I'm on that.
Nationalize the means of production. You got me.
Yeah, it's all show myself out. You need me with that hammer and sickle. You want me with that hammer and sickle.
It's like they think that if they just yell the right thing, he'll start singing the Internationale, and then like it'll all
yes,
the facade will crumble.
Actually, you know what it might be, and this has only just occurred to me. They might be adopting the Trump playbook, whereby you simply attack. Doesn't matter whether what you say is true or reasonable or sensible. You just say crooked Hillary over and over again.
Oh, 100%.
Before you, and 100%, that's an odd thing for Turnbull to take on, particularly when I keep saying this as just kind of wanting to hope that it's true. Australian politics doesn't yet work the way that America does. And Donald Trump is a unique and very gifted in some respects communicator. And I don't think he can simply wish to have his ability to win over the middle and do so. Corey Bernardi. So, okay. They're in a
But when you've got Corey Bernardi and his gifted oratory, his beautifully, definitely well thought out and articulate nautical metaphors.
It's not everyone who can fit an entire, you know, election winning policy platform in a tweet or on a hat. So I feel like we should give him some credit for
give
that.
Him time.
Make Australia me again.
the other thing I guess is that for a lot of people, they don't care about whether people agree with them. And there's a lot of dogma in the right of both parties, but I guess Labor's been pretty good over the years at compromising on some of this other stuff. But your Erica Betts is not going to compromise. Those guys, they're not going to give in. But furthermore, they are certain, and this is where the silent majority theory comes in, they're absolutely certain that everyone agrees with them, that Corey Bernardi, I reckon if you asked him honestly, if you could somehow access what tiny little aspect of him is actually speaking the truth. Because somehow, put him on a lie detector, he would say, I reckon most Australians agree with where I am. I think that if you read what they say, that, you know, so many of us are oppressed by political correctness. We can't let our true pro-Christian, anti-gay selves out of the box because we're so oppressed by the left's powerful political correctness that doesn't win them elections for years.
It's amazing how many oppressed and silenced people have TV shows and radio shows.
I know, it's amazing.
I know.
Like poor oppressed individuals like, you know, like Ross Cameron.
The Outsiders.
They're so brave. So brave.
Let's get on to that. And we were... at some point we'll get Jacqueline Maley along on the podcast to talk about her trip to the Q Society. It's the same constituency. And it just goes to show how extreme the sort of Aussie Trumpians are. These are the guys who, as Ross Cameron, Mark Latham, and who's the other one?
Oh, Larry Pickering? He was...
No.
Rowan Dean, on the outsider.
Yeah. And so they had Trump's Aussie mates on election day. And they won and were very, very pleased with themselves. So they pitched this show, The Outsiders, despite having in no way ever been outsiders at all. And the fact
nothing
that they
says
could
outsiders
get,
like parliamentary pensions. I
yeah,
mean,
nothing
that just
says outsiders like getting a TV show up with one email. My God, if I could do that.
I've tried so many times.
Yeah, I just keep sending Ross Cameron these ideas for shows.
But he suddenly, I don't know, he's been a mainstay of the commentariat for a very long time. Insider, but he suddenly seems to have let his freak flag fly in the past little while. What did you make of those reports, Maddie? I mean, that was pretty extraordinary, wasn't it?
Yeah, I first read Jacqueline's article, and I did sort of suspect they'd maybe just picked out the most upsetting and extreme things that were said because I didn't think it was possible for a full speech to live up to that level of insanity.
Comedy, please. Who's being funny?
But then I was proved wrong. So but one of the things which was really striking to me is they're all waxing very lyrically about the importance of free debate and the importance of logic and the importance of reason, sort of bringing up all the ancient Greeks. At no point...
Although gay-bashing them as well. The founders of our intellectual... I guess system.
Our pillow biters, yes.
Throw them off a building, Larry Pickering. Oh, God. Andrew, don't say anything. You work for the Sydney Morning Homosexual.
But at no point anyone ever try to actually pose a logical argument. And that's, I find, something which happens a lot in this debate. There's a lot of talk about how people are being silenced and how they can't say what they want to say and that no one wants to debate anything. It's very rare to see someone that seems to hold those opinions to actually say, all right, here is my debate. Here is my argument that I am putting forth. So that was just completely absent.
Well, I just love the way that the new fashion for comparing oneself to Copernicus, which I thought was remarkable given that Copernicus's entire idea about a heliocentric universe was based on observation and data rather than angrily denying observation and data.
Yes.
Also, Copernicus was not particularly oppressed. He was actually published by the church. The person they're thinking of is Galileo, which is about 100 years later.
Yes.
But nonetheless, that's, I'm accusing...
Malcolm Roberts in a few moments, but anyway.
Yes, and of course he's sort of saying Copernicus, but meaning Galileo, sort of said that the reason it took us so long to work out that the Earth actually revolved around the sun is that people were afraid of being booed off the stage. And no, they were afraid of being executed. It's a bit different.
Well, Andrew Bolt got in a bit of trouble with the court. Same thing, isn't it?
He got into trouble because he lied, though, not because he was racist.
You and your
details. That's what you want to accurately believe.
Yeah.
But this is the other thing, that all this flowering of the far right, of your Bernardis and your Hansons and the Q Society, named after
Quokkas?
Quokkas? I don't know. They're named after
James after the Bond's guy from James Bond.
Gadget
guy,
I don't know. Or the Spike Milligan show. Who knows? look, I don't want to just leap to assumptions here, but
I get
the sense that the Trump brand is not... they're not going to be the greatest coattails to hang on. For one thing, you'll have his tie flapping around in your face. But look, it's already a disaster. Surely already Americans are rethinking things. Today, as we speak, he's just lost his national security advisor. He's not looking like a great model. And all the Trump's Aussie mates I'm sure it hasn't yet occurred to them, but then it's not going to be a great pitch to the next Australian election.
Go ahead, Maddie.
Sorry, I was going to say, interestingly, though, his disapproval rates are going up, but so are his approval rates. And I think it does speak to this sort of kind of debate when people feel persecuted by the other side of politics, they're not coming to the middle, they're digging in.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, sort of the more the Bernardis, the Christensens, the Q Society types of the world are sort of askew, you know, they're not sort of coming around. They're just holding their ground and digging in and sort of saying, well, you know, they wouldn't be attacking me if I wasn't right.
You're very, very alt-right. Yeah. Well, but also...
That's how I always feel about murderers. I'm like, well, you know, they wouldn't be fighting back at me as I try to stab them in the face if I wasn't stabbing with a very good point.
It's my rule, if you ever look at someone's Twitter bio and it quotes... And I love Orwell, but if you ever see someone quote Orwell about Orwell or a sort of similar writer sort of saying that, you know, people can't handle the truth, you know that person's going to be a dickhead and they're just going to run around saying terrible things and envision themselves as one man speaking truth to power.
And this is the strange thing, is that so much of the oppression is completely imaginary. I have no problem with the people in the Q Society getting together in their weird little cabal and having these speeches and saying all of those things. Admittedly, there are some regulations that they may have fallen slightly foul of. But in general, say your crazy stuff, guys. Mm. Bell yourself. Bell the cat that... I hate that expression. You know, let it all out there and we will laugh at you. It's not as though they shouldn't be allowed to say these things. Larry Pickering can spew his...
To be fair, we do laugh at them.
We do.
This is the oppression right here, guys. It's the three of us semi-employed people in your living room as the elites...
I'm so tired of elites like us.
Oh my god!
Spitting at Ross Cameron with his parliamentary pensioner and all his media jobs.
When I was walking up here from my Uber, I was just wielding my power the whole sort of 200 meters up the road. But I mean, the thing that I find baffling about this, and we sort of talked about this on this podcast before, is. See, in the US, it kind of makes sense. Like, I can see why there is a constituency there who perhaps don't normally turn out to elections. Like, you want to galvanize them. You want to make them feel like they've got to sort of fight the power by coming out and voting. In Australia, that everybody has to vote already. There is no silent majority in the sense that there is no majority that don't vote.
Yeah, Billy Bob, who got laid off from the coal mine 10 years ago and has been sitting in a despondent state since...
Like that, finally having someone to believe in that he goes out and votes for.
Unfortunately, Trump. But yeah, it's not the same.
Here they have already. I mean, they've always had to vote, and by and large, their votes will flow to the Liberal Party anyway, just through the way the preferences fall.
But this is the thing Labor has been very good at for a long time, and admittedly, they haven't won them a lot of elections. But they, Labor has for decades sacrificed its dearest principles to expediency in the centre. I mean, that's what the Labor Party is for. Mm. And so for the coalition to be able to have the same levels of success, bearing in mind that many of us are quite conservative, it needs the centre to defeat the extreme.
Exactly.
And that often happens. I think that certainly has happened in places like New South Wales in recent years. But it's not happening federally, and it can't happen while Turnbull has this very difficult mathematical equation.
Well, they're abandoning the centre. They're actively abandoning the centre at the moment. That's what the One Nation deal is all about.
But One Nation effectively outflanks Labor from the left.
On some issues, it does.
On some issues it does. It's really all about sort of, you know, did Trump outflank Clinton on the left as well?
It reminds me of how that party was at once both ultra-nationalist and socialist. What were they called again? Anyway, let's...
The Greens.
No, the Nazis. let's get on to the WA deal, Maddie. And this is a strange one. I mean, everyone's looking back idealistically at the days of John Howard, who drew a line in the sand and said, there we will not go, we will not preference this mob, admittedly having had his arm twisted. Yeah, we decided it comes into our policy workshop and the circumstances in which they come. What do you think they should do? I mean, I gather that there's a sense in which us sitting very, very east might not understand all the dynamics in WA, but what should happen here? Should they be allowed to make a deal? But they're not going into coalition. They're doing a preference deal here.
Yeah, well, they can, you know, obviously they should be allowed to do whatever they want. And I did read somewhere today making the very good point that preference deals are really only valuable depending on how many people you around handing out how to vote.
That's true.
Well, one thing I found out while I was researching this these deals, because obviously One Nation are gaining a lot of support in Queensland and looks to be soon in Western Australia, but I think the policies that they're mainly known for are quite federal. They're mainly based around immigration. So I looked up to see what their state-based policies were.
Oh, yes.
They have three.
I was actually looking at their page today for an article that I've got coming out. And, yeah, it was amazing. You saw all these long things about halal and Islam, and then suddenly you got these little things, but I didn't click on them. What did they say?
All right. So number one, clean government. I'm like, okay, right.
Yeah.
Especially in this term, people will be...
Is that like clean coal or is it actually clean? Well,
so we have to lacquer everybody, yeah. I think, is the message.
Absolutely. Well, they want to restrict the much closer accounting in terms of expenditure, which I think living through the Susan Ley issue, anyone would agree with.
Whoa, WA Inc. Yeah, that sounds reasonable, actually. Okay.
They actually do have a statewide policy across all states. They want to reduce the number of MPs by half, which I think will be very interesting to deal with once they're in power.
We are arguably...
I suspect their opinion on that will change dramatically.
Mm. I absolutely think we're overgoverned, but if our Senate were half the size it was, no one from One Nation would be in power. So I think that could end them up with a bit of a catch-22 situation. There's also a big law and order section, very conservative.
Which one? SVU? Because if it's SVU, I'm in favour.
Law and order stealing money from ICE addicts. So basically, two strikes and you're in jail, and then the cost of your incarceration will be deducted from your pay until it's paid off.
Isn't
that the Chinese sort of, invoicing the family for the cost of the bullet that executed you?
What's their policy on death penalty for former WA Senator Rod Cullerton and his difficulties with the law?
I'm surprised there's not like half a dozen Cullerton-specific policies.
I'm surprised there's not half a dozen Cullertons running. His family seems to be basically WA One Nation.
Well, there was only room for three policies, and so obviously they're going to preference, like, make their most important ones the top three. Absolutely key issues for them. Can either of you want to take a shot at what their third most important, we're going to control this state policy is?
Do they want to send the cops in and get rid of the halals?
Mm-hmm.
They want to send the cops in and get rid of the sharks and the halals?
No.
Anti-swan legislation? I don't know.
This is the hardest question I've been asked in a long time. What would you care about if you were WA One Nation?
It's about Rod Cullerton, right?
Is it about quokkas?
No. Well, depending on what you want to do with them.
All right.
It's about chiropractic access.
Huh. Boom.
Hey, boom. I know, that's a winner. They feel that there has been an unfair level of targeting of chiropractic as not legitimate medicine.
Yeah, pesky evidence basis. Yeah.
Yes, and while there is actually nothing in the state policy so far that prohibits people accessing it with medical services, they just want to make sure that one won't be.
Okay, it's Medicare, federal,
prophylactic protection for chiropractic.
Exactly.
I think it's good that they're protecting magicians. Yeah, that's wonderful.
They're really tapping into the heartbeat of Western Australia, aren't they?
Absolutely.
Well, no, because the heartbeat's actually a medical thing, Andrew. But
sorry, the chakras.
That is amazing.
The vibrating chakras.
So, well, this is the thing, that it is quite a different situation, and so I mean, I kind of thought. I was genuinely perplexed about why the Liberal Party would consider preferencing One Nation over the Nationals. I mean, obviously there's an electoral calculus, but they're not good friends. And there have been issues in the past. During the time there was a big trading war between Abbott and Gillard to try and get the prime ministership in 2010, the WA Nationals MP, whose name eludes me, was potentially flirting with the enemy, although it didn't end up going that way.
Oh.
So they're a law unto themselves, the WA Nationals.
They are, but the thing that's kind of most interesting about this preference deal, aside from the fact that it does really only affect the order on how to vote cards, and it's only for, I think, their regional seats. Like, I mean, certainly the ones that the Nationals have got the highest chance of actually winning.
Yeah, the ones that matter to the Nationals.
Yeah. So it's kind of, adding insult to actual injury. But the fascinating thing is that apparently nobody told the Nationals candidates in West Australia that this deal was happening, because then the ABC were reporting that at least two of them have come out very, very stridently saying that they will definitely not be preferencing the Liberals. I know one of them was saying that she will be preferencing Labor because she agrees with their law and order policy.
Well, actually, I've just looked at this. The WA Nationals are preferencing the Greens, first of all.
Well, I guess that's a way of doing it symbolically without actually, running any electoral risk at all.
Greens over Liberals. So, yeah, look, there was something in the past where the WA Nationals combined with Labor or something. So WA is different. And,
it does seem like One Nation are not great with the group email, because there was that situation as well. Was it Rod Cullerton making announcement to Hanson on air or vice versa? It seems to be
When Hanson was saying we need to have a meeting during an interview.
Yeah, on air. Yeah. Basically, well, he ain't picking up my phone calls. It felt like a very creepy episode of Love Song Dedication.
Well, it also kind of makes it makes sense, because Rod Cullerton does have that air of somebody who does probably think the television is speaking directly to him. So, I guess it makes sense. It's very well targeted.
If you're hearing this, Rod, just call.
We miss you already.
I know.
Upper House is the saner for your absence.
Rod Cullerton, give us a call. We missed you.
A little bit of Sade to take us up to the weather. You're with Rod Cullerton.
Please, let's make that happen. If I had any influence in radio anymore, that would be on. Yeah, look, I'm trying to... It is a different state. It's a different situation. Mm. And I don't know. I don't really see how any political party with anything resembling a conscience could do a deal with One Nation. But look, this is where we are. We are where we are. We're handing out lumps of coal in the parliament. It's considered normal for the Treasury to rock up with a lump of coal. This is 2017, people. This is where we find ourselves.
It's a fuzzy-wuzzy free-for-all.
We make fun of it, but there's no, we've all worked in media. We know you need a vis op. It's much easier to get on telly if you're holding a prop.
It's certainly the least boring Scott Morrison's been since becoming Treasurer. I'll give him that.
That is very true.
The strangest thing about this is if we tie all of this in a bow and try and make sense of where we're going as a country, the answer still is nowhere. Absolutely nowhere. And it's extraordinary. I mean, we've had the other news we didn't really get to because of all the fun with the coal is the omnibus savings bill being vetoed, another attempt by the government to do something, anything, by the wayside. We are literally circling the airport, wondering what's going to happen if we're going to have enough fuel. And fortunately, there's coal on board. You can just chuck in the engines and it'll all be tickety-boo.
Well, speaking of big props, I mean, the reason that the omnibus bill, the whole thing of like, we'll give you slightly more child access to childcare funding as long as we can slash a whole range of welfare spending measures. The person who is holding that up is a man who is no stranger to the use of good political props, which is Nick Xenophon and his little tree senator block.
Pajamas, the whole thing.
He's big on the pajamas in Senate during the epic sitting.
You make a good point, though. If the government's serious about passing the omnibus bill, they should drive an omnibus into the parliament and hand out lumps of coal for everyone.
That's right. Great. Oh, wow. I feel like they're just not trying.
What is even the or point?
If they made it an omnibus, but a tiny little omnibus, then Xenophon would at least respect that. He's a man who likes small cars.
He does.
Get on board.
I've never said this before. In my 40 years of life, but I think being a parliamentarian is looking fun. If you don't have to do any real work, just turn up, muck around with props and never pass anything, I could do that. I've got the qualifications.
I was doing
I'm amazing at wasting time.
I like a nap.
Yeah. Look, I enjoy just yelling names at people whilst achieving nothing. So, I feel like I could be a front bencher right now.
You practically are, Andy.
Yeah, that's
you practically
true.
Are. There
not
you go,
with
Matty.
A beard, though. They wouldn't let you with a beard. That's a Labour thing.
That is a Labour thing. Matty, final thoughts as we bid our conversation farewell and who knows where we go from
and
here.
And democracy.
And,
with
yes. And everything, really.
We're just rearranging deck chairs in the Titanic now, aren't we?
At least the Titanic did something. It actually got somewhere. It achieved something.
They'd just be floating around the Atlantic.
Well, they were iceberg.
They would be sick of each other.
There aren't any icebergs anymore. We've melted them all, so that's fine. It's fine. Problem solved.
Thank you, Cole.
I think that they're probably hoping that in state government, One Nation will turn out to be a bit of a paper tiger because most of their policies are very federal in nature. So that might be a way of kind of ameliorating the One Nation Party without actually having to enact many of the things that they want to do. So that's what I think they might be thinking, but, you know, it's really hard to say these days.
I do quite like the absolutely just straight down the line way that you raised the prospect of One Nation forming government in some way. Hello, 2017. So we are. Andrew, any final thoughts before we turn off the podcast machine?
I just find the idea that of anybody banking on One Nation being able to hold itself together for any length of time, whether that's a state parliamentary term or whether that's the 2 years between now and the federal election, is so ambitious. If history has taught us anything, it's that One Nation's greatest talent is to really, really white out One Nation.
And it's a multitude of nations, really, isn't it?
One Nation, but they're certainly not one party. And considering that there's four of them and 24 million of us, it doesn't really speak that highly.
I mean, Malcolm Roberts, if I understand correctly, is actually several people coexisting within the same person with or without colons and indivisible souls. There you go.
He contains multitudes.
Get excited, Australia. This is where we are in 2017. We'll catch you next week. Andrew, thank you very much for making it, Palmer.
Pleasure to be here.
Crap, these idiots will pull next week.
Bye.
We'll be here to talk about it.